Well, good morning, everyone. I said it at the previous service, and I'll say it again. It's a real pleasure for me to be back here in one of my old stomping grounds. I had the pleasure of fellowshipping here for 11 years or so when I was studying here at the university and working in the government. But then, I was saying at the last meeting, the Lord has led me to work overseas, using the skills that I learned in the university towards the effort of Bible translation in the country of Chad. I'm still wearing my shirt, you know. Well, anyway, hope it's not a distraction. I can cover it up now. But anyway, I just wanted to start by, thanking each one of you for your faithful support of me over the years, both in prayer and financially and every way. Looking for some faces that I don't see, but I'm glad for the ones that I do. The Lord leads us all in different ways, and so it's great to get to know some new faces and some new people, and we'll look forward to having some more time to meet together over the meal and on other occasions. I thank the Lord also for leading Matthew. Matthew, okay, got one. For the first hymn, because the faith is one of the main topics of what I have to share this morning. And it's a story, and I'll tell you more about stories, as we read briefly in the book of Numbers. A good Sunday school story about spies. Numbers chapter 13. And that says it all for those of you in the know. So, let's start. We'll skip around a bit. Follow along with me, if you will, for the time being as we read. This will be in Numbers 13 and then a little bit in 14. Numbers 13, verse 1. The Lord said to Moses, "Send some men to explore the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the Israelites. From each ancestral tribe, send one of its leaders." We'll embellish the story a little bit later, but we'll skip back down to verse 26 after these spies or these explorers came back. Verse 26. They came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. "We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev, the Hittites, Jebusites, and Amorites live in the hill country, and the Canaanites live near the sea and along the Jordan." Now skip again into the 14th chapter, verse 5. Then Moses and Aaron fell face down in front of the whole Israelite assembly gathered there. Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had explored the land, tore their clothes and said to the entire Israelite assembly, "The land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will swallow them up. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them." Now, in the interest of time, I've only skipped around in this passage. You can read it for yourself when you go home. Or maybe, as we develop things, maybe you'll want to check up on me by reading it instead of listening to me. Maybe that would be a more profitable use of your time. At any rate, I just wanted to speak this morning a little bit about faith, as I mentioned before. and perhaps the faith that we need for starting new ventures. And that's, if I have to give a title to the message, that might be the title I would give. Here we have an example from the Old Testament. We're told in the New Testament, of course, that the things that were written there are for our learning and for that we might benefit from the experiences of others and the walk that they've had with the Lord. And here we have a very, very interesting account of what happened to the children of Israel as God was leading them out of servitude and slavery in the land of Egypt into the land that he promised to them, to their ancestors, in fact, a land flowing with milk and honey, as we saw the expression repeated in this very passage that we read. So, actually, over in Chad, just to make a connection there, in recent years, of course, we're working on the enterprise of translating the scriptures into the local languages. But for a country where there is so little, such a low degree of literacy in reading and writing, we find that one strategy that's very useful is to start people by an oral approach and get them to hear Bible stories told very faithfully to the original and with a message behind them. And in fact, it's interesting, as this seems to be a wave in the that's coming along in the missiological community, in terms of reaching some of the unreached people who are not necessarily interested in reading and writing. It's this what they call the storying approach. And in fact, I was interested to find out that one of the pioneers, not that this was a movement at the time, one of the pioneers in this whole approach was one of our missionaries that you may have heard of, Paul Bramson, who is a missionary in Senegal. And he, if you can even look at this up on the internet, he has a couple of books. He prepared a series of messages which were delivered on the radio and have been translated into a number of different languages, especially in Africa, directed toward Muslims, and based on the lives of the prophets, as the Muslims would respect them. And the collection is called The Way of Righteousness, and you can buy this as a book. And you can even, you may be able to download it from the internet. He has a more recent book called One God, One Message, which I've read, and which is an excellent defense of the faith, especially in the light of email messages that he himself received from Muslims. So if you're interested, you could check that out on the internet. At any rate, the whole approach that I'm speaking of has to do with telling stories. And from there, telling stories from God's Word, and from there, drawing the lessons that that bear on people's lives. And as a result, then they can, at a later stage, get involved in actually reading the scriptures for themselves and coming to faith. But anyway, this is a new approach that's being explored now in many areas on the mission field. So we do have a story before us this morning. And what I'll do is try to attempt to retell the story, if you will, even though we didn't read all of it. We will go through the story again in more detail, but through my retelling. And that's where you have to make sure, if you want to follow along, keep me on the straight and narrow, make sure I don't stray from what is actually stated in the text. Well, we have, as I stated before, we have the story here of a historical incident where the children of Israel were being led from Egypt through the leadership of Moses to the promised land, the land of Canaan, as it was known in that time. And here they've come across the Sinai Desert. And they're right now at the threshold of the ready to enter into the new the promised land. And so, as we read it in the first verse that we read, we find that God tells Moses to choose 12 men, one to represent each of the tribes of the children of Israel. And as a group, they will go in as spies, as we read it in the King James Version, or explorers, in order to check out this land that the Lord has promised to give them. So one from each tribe, and they go in. Now, Moses gives them an injunction, and we didn't read this part, so there are a number of things that you'll have to check me up on. But basically, he tells them to do two things while they're in this land. They're to check out two areas in particular. Check out the land itself. Is the land suitable for, you know, supporting our population? Is it fertile or is it poor? Are there trees there? What about fruit? Is there fruit there? God said it was a land flowing with milk and honey, which seems to just suggest that it would be a very fertile area, but let's check it out. And if you can bring some of the fruit back, that would be great. So check out the land. Secondly, check out the people, because this is already a populated territory. So what are these people like? Are they strong? Are they weak? Are there few? Or are they numerous? And what about their towns? They do have towns there. Are they just unwalled cities, or are they actually fortified cities? Check this out in your report as you set forth to explore the land. And he finishes up by saying something that we, at least in French, we like to say, but it's not very idiomatic in English. He says, be of good courage. We don't say that on a daily basis, although we do say bon courage in French. be of good courage. Hang in there. The Lord is with you. Come back with a faithful report of what you see as you go on your trip. All right, despite the difficulties that you may encounter, bring us back a faithful report. So they do go. They go into and some of the localities are mentioned of where they visited. Hebron, which was a place where some of their ancestors, Abraham and so forth, had been and whatnot. And another place that they visited was the Valley of Eshcol. And this one was evidently a very fertile area. So much so that they found wonderful fruit there. Fruit so abundant and huge. Texas-sized fruit, you might say. that it took two men with a pole to carry one bunch of grapes. And they actually were able to bring that back as a part of their retelling of what had happened. And their whole trip took 40 days. So they were 40 days exploring the length and the breadth of the land as much as they could to bring back the report. All right, well, they get back now. And what is the report that they give? Well, they say, yes, as far as the land is concerned, the land is good. And here, in fact, look at these grapes. Look, there was pomegranates and there were figs. And maybe other things too, but they had some to produce to give evidence of the goodness of the land. It really was a land flowing with milk and honey, as the expression went. But there was a but. On the other hand, what about the people there? And there they had some reservations. They had the report that the men were powerful. And in fact, there were numerous, and in fact, they were giants, the descendants of Anak, which were the, I think that was even from an allusion to giants that lived before the time of the flood, and so this is what we bring back as a report. Now, in conclusion, what will we tell you? Well, there was division. There was a divided opinion as to the bottom line. Caleb, one of the 12, spoke up and said, yes, let's go up. We can do it. The Lord is with us. We can conquer the land, and let's indeed go in as the Lord has commanded us to do. However, The 10 of the others were not of that opinion. They were swayed more by the fearful size and power of the population of the people that lived there, and they advised against going in. The people are stronger than we are, and in fact, these 10 that were that didn't want to continue with the campaign of conquering the land, they in fact spread rumors throughout the population of the camp that in fact they did some exaggeration. They in fact they called the people giants on the one hand, which is a bit of an exaggeration. Undoubtedly they were larger than they were powerful and they were strong. And perhaps they were giants compared to the Israelite people. But then they went and said something else which is a bit astonishing. And in fact I think we could even say that they falsified some of the report. They said the land itself, well, they said it was good, but they said the land devours the people that live there. Now, where did they get that from? Some of the commentators tell us that there was a possibility that there was a plague going along in the land, and so maybe that's what was occasioned that particular remark. But otherwise, it seems, sounds like a falsification of what they had actually found. And if there had been a plague, wouldn't that have decimated the population and helped, been in their favor if they had been willing to go in? In any case, that's what happened. That was the bottom line that the 10 of these spies brought. That was a very negative report, and in fact they said, we're just grasshoppers compared to these giants that we find in the land. We disadvise going in. And as a result, a general rebellion happened throughout the community. There was grumbling against Moses and Aaron. That happened on numerous occasions, it would seem, but here in particular, it was directed against Moses and Aaron. And it went so far as to say, well, let's go back to Egypt. You know, we can't go forward, let's go back. Let's find some leaders that'll take us back. So that's what they were ready to do. And then Joshua speaks up. He's he's Caleb's sidekick, if you will, and we read his word in the bit of the portion that we actually read together. And again, Joshua also supported Caleb's report that yes, indeed, it was time to go in, just as the Lord had commanded them. In fact, Joshua says, "You know, we will swallow these people up. We may look like grasshoppers, according to some of you, but we will actually swallow them up because the Lord is on our side. The Lord is on our side, and any protection that these people might have had, humanly speaking, is gone. The Lord has removed it, and it is time for us to go in according to the promise of the Lord." Well, The report of Caleb and Joshua was rejected. The people in general were ready to stone them in fact. And finally, God comes in and intervenes, and he has the final word in the matter. In fact, he's ready to destroy the people, but again, Moses intervenes, and he finally brings down this judgment. That in fact, the whole generation of adults that had come out of Egypt was not to enter into the land. You don't want to go in? Fine, you will not go in. Your children will go in. My promise remains. But you will not see it. It's only your children that will see it. And in fact, in order for this to actually come about, You folks, you 12 were in the land for 40 days, right? Well, that was a good time for you to actually check things out. Well, now, to correspond to that, you're going to wander in the desert for 40 years before you actually go in. And during that time, all of your carcasses will drop in the desert, as we read it elsewhere in scriptures. So this is the story that we have before us. And now, now if we go back through it, the thing is, what can we learn for ourselves from the experiences of this of the people of Israel? As I say, I think the key to this whole thing is, again, our faith or lack of it in the Lord. And that is the way I would begin as we try to apply this to our own situation. If the Lord is calling us to start a new venture, it depends on what it is. I don't know what it would be for you or for someone else. We're sort of at the beginning of a new year, although 1 month is already gone. We're at the beginning of a new month. And college students are at the beginning of a new semester. I don't know what other beginnings you might have which would cause you to think about, again, renewing your faith and your dependence on the Lord. It might be something as simple as Monday morning is coming around tomorrow. Maybe you need strength and a renewed vision as you start a new work week. I don't know what it might be for you. But in all of that, God has the resources and the wherewithal to move you forward. First of all, as was the case for the children of Israel, we want to ask, well, what has God promised you? God had promised this land to the children of Israel. And as we find out in what happened, they shrank back. They shrank back despite the promise of the Lord. But what has God promised us? If you're here this morning and you haven't actually trusted the Lord as your personal Savior based on the sacrifice that He made on Calvary's cross, He offers, again, His rest. Come unto Me, He calls, each one of us, if you're weary and heavy burdened, and I will give you rest. That's one of the offers that He makes to those who have not taken His offer until to this point. He offers peace, the peace that passes understanding, and joy, all these things. He offers His very presence. The one who puts his trust in God can say, well, what can man do to me? God is with me, and I will not be abandoned. And what can man do to me? So all these things are things that God, we can take from God as promises, even as believers, but especially as unbelievers. That's something that He holds out to any of us. And perhaps as a believer, He has actually, in your communion with Him, in your reading of the Word and in prayer, perhaps He has laid on your heart some other new venture. And He's given you a particular promise through His Word and through your communion with Him for something that you need to start up. I don't know what it might be. Each one of you has a different background and experience. But if there's something that the Lord has promised you, what we learn from this story is that we need to act on it in faith and in confidence. Well, let's move forward in as we go through the story, some of the lessons that we can learn from the Israelites. It's interesting that when the same story is retold in Deuteronomy in the first chapter, it seems that this idea of going in to explore the land was maybe not in the first hand God's command. It seems like the idea came from the people themselves, that they were the one that asked, before they were actually to go in, to go and explore the thing. But God was good enough to say, okay, fine. Prove me to be true, in other words. Let's choose these 12 men. Go in and check it out and prove me to be true. That would be perhaps what God would say in response to their request. They didn't go immediately, but said, okay, God, all right, you're a little bit hesitant. Fine, go and explore it, and you will see that what I've promised is actually true. Be of good courage. Okay, when they went in, as is so often the case, maybe it's always the case, they found good points and they found bad points, you know? Encouraging items and discouraging items. You know, that's our human experience anyway. Not everything is all go, go, go from a human standpoint, you know? There are always going to be things that cause us to have hesitations and discouragements and whatnot. But, and this I think is the key again, the key to the bottom line, all has to do with your predisposition of your attitude toward God. Do you have faith or do you not? Are you willing to trust God for the things that you cannot control? As we find in the experience of the children of Israel, all but two of them were willing to be swayed by human and very natural circumstances that all seemed to go in the negative direction. But you know, in all of that, they forgot a lot of things. As we read through this passage, on the one hand, they forgot the deliverance that the Lord had miraculously operated through Moses when they passed through the Red Sea. He brought them out of slavery, and God had manifested His power and His glory through them in their living experience. It hadn't been all that long ago, but they consciously were willing to forget that. The God who brought them through the Red Sea and whatnot was not able to bring them into the land. This was the upshot of what they were actually saying. So they'd forgotten that. They'd also forgotten, they were going to find a leader to take them back to Egypt, where they were in slavery. They evidently forgot all of the tremendous burdens that the Egyptians kept piling on them, and they were willing to forget all that. So they basically didn't have the promise of God before them, and they were willing consciously to forget all these other aspects that God was able to overcome, but they were very narrow in their focus. They looked only at things in human fashion, and they were willing to be swayed against it. But, you know, it was their predisposition to not believe that caused the whole result in what they decided. Again, it was their faith, or our faith, too, or lack of it, that determines all of that. And as I pointed out as I was telling the story, I took a little bit of liberty in interpreting some of the things. I said, in order to come to this negative conclusion that we must draw back now, they did two things to the facts. They exaggerated them, and they falsified them. They exaggerated the strength of these people. Remember that Joshua and Caleb said, okay, they were strong, that's fine, we're not going to deny that, but God is stronger through their faith. But they were exaggerating to the point, of course, they were comparing themselves to grasshoppers in the sight of these huge giants that could do everything, you know. But of course, again, Caleb and Joshua, they were speaking for the Lord, saying, you know, well, they may be strong, but their defenses are gone now. The Lord will be on our side. So they exaggerated the size and the magnitude of the problem, and they even falsified it. That's the way I interpret what they were saying when they say that the land devours us. Again, I don't see where, what concrete basis there would have been for that particular statement. So that's what we are inclined to do too. If we are lacking in faith, we're going to grab at straws, anything to bolster our basic attitude of unbelief to draw back. That, of course, didn't deter Caleb and Joshua. And again, that's the model we should keep before us. Not that of the ten that had no faith, and following on with the ten, there was of course the whole community which followed them in their estimation of the situation. So they had forgotten the past, as I pointed out. And they were lacking in faith in particular. Another thing is, as we remind ourselves, if we are going to move ahead with the Lord when He calls us to start off on something new, remember that we are going to be in the minority. You know, Caleb and Joshua were just two against the whole company, but yet, because of their faith, they were willing to stand firm against the ten, initially, and against the whole company of Israel, to the point of just about being stoned. But their faith allowed them to stand fast. And of course, when God intervened, of course He did confirm their position against the majority. So again, don't expect to find a lot of people on your side if you're following in faith according to the promises that God has made. You can be expecting to be in the minority. And then finally, as we draw to the end of the story, we find that there really is a solemn warning associated with the lack of belief. Again, when God comes in judgment, He has this judgment that none of the adults will enter into the land, and this was the judgment He had on their unbelief. And here is the solemn part of it: there was no second chance. Toward the end of chapter 14. We find out that the Israelites were just like children. And how often so many of us adults were just like children too. Oh, you know, God's going to judge you. Oh, well, all right, well, we'll go up then. We'll go up. It's okay. We'll go just like you said. And then Moses had to warn them. After this all had gone forth, they all right, well, we'll go in. Moses had to tell them, no, God has judged you. You will not succeed if you go in now. And in fact, they organized a little party to actually go in, but they were soundly defeated and had to come back with their tail between their legs. So it's a bit solemn, you know. It's just like a child would do if they were being disciplined. And so often we're like that too. Let's respond in faith to the Lord the first time and not waver. That's the basic lesson that we need to take from this. And as we conclude, I just ask us, let's look at Hebrews chapter 3. In a couple of places in Hebrews, we're reminded of some of the things that happened in the Old Testament. And in fact, in this particular passage, we are warned about the unbelief that characterized the children of Israel on so many occasions. And in fact, if we turn to chapter 3 of Hebrews, we have basically a repetition of God's judgment on them in verse 11. So I declared, this is God speaking, I declared on oath in my anger, they shall never enter into my rest. Of course, that could be applied to the fact that these adults would never enter the promised land, but only their children. But then as what we take from that, let's read 12 and 13. "See to it, brothers, that none of you has a sinful, unbelieving heart that turns away from the living God. But encourage one another daily, as long as it is called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness." We all know what the temptations of sin are in this world today. And in light of all of that, in order to stand fast for the Lord, here is a very specific recommendation that we have. It's precious, the communion that we have together with other children of God, that we can encourage one another on a daily basis. And that's what we keep needing to do. At least Joshua and Caleb, they had the two of them. You know, they had a little bit of support from the other one, even if the whole company apart from them was against them. They had this that encouragement. And we also need that encouragement from one another. And let's rely on it as a company of the Lord's believers. As we strike out in new things, we can share that and bear it up at the throne of grace in prayer together. And it's really something that's a precious gift that the Lord has given us, that we're not called to be believers on our own, but that we have others that will support us, that know the same, have had the same experience with the Lord, and know what He can do, and that can actually give us some useful support in the whole enterprise, whatever the Lord is calling us to do. So let's move forth again in faith from day to day, basing our thoughts on what God has promised us. We don't want to start off on new ventures just on our own thoughts, but what God has promised us, and then looking to the God who is able to do all this. There's an old song that I don't think I've ever sung in the assemblies that I've ever been in, but I learned it when we were with the Wycliffe Bible Translators. It's one of their old songs that they use. You may know it. "Faith, mighty faith, the promise sees and looks to God alone, laughs at impossibilities and shouts, 'It shall be done for the glory of God.'" So let's look to the Lord now, and look to Him for the days ahead, and for what He's doing among us. Lord, we thank You again for Your promises and for all that You are. The fact that You were willing to come down into this world to save us, to die on the cross in order to purchase a people for Your own. And we thank You that You've given us this faith that allows us to move forward with You. May we take advantage of all the resources that You've given us, that we may encourage one another as we see You at work. As we see Your call and Your promises, let's look back to what You have done in the past, reminding ourselves that You're the same God that will work in the future the same way. And may we take hold of these things by faith, and that Your name might be glorified. We just ask You again to undertake for us and to be with us. We think of those who have particular challenges, whether they be in the area of health or other struggles, obstacles in their lives. You know what they are, Lord, and we just ask for each one. As we move forward, may we have the faith of Joshua and Caleb to look beyond the challenges, look beyond the things that are negative, to see what You would promise and see what faith in You can actually accomplish. So we've seen that in the past, and we ask You to accomplish that again in our lives, that we might be encouraged in the days ahead. And now, as we look forward to communing with one another around the table downstairs, we give You thanks for Your faithfulness in providing the food, and we do ask for Your blessing on the fellowship as we share it together. And in the days ahead, we just look to you for all things. In Jesus' name, amen.